Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the 15th episode of Awards Chatter, the Hollywood Reporter's awards podcast. I'm the host, Scott Feinberg, and I'm so happy to be joined on this episode by Blythe Danner, a great actress of stage and screen who's celebrating her 50th year in the acting profession, and yet also her first leading role, if you can believe it, in a movie, namely Brett Haley's I'll See You in My Dreams, which came out earlier this year and was very appreciated by adults who are kind of starved of movies for them outside of the Oscar season. The fact that this movie was released outside of the Oscar season, however, doesn't mean that it won't be part of it. And to that point, I think it's worth noting that Blythe Danner was a Best Actress nominee at Monday night's Gotham Independent Film Awards, which are one of the more important precursors ahead of the Oscars. Now, speaking of the Gotham Independent Film Awards, let's talk about what's happened over the past week, as we always do, before we get to our conversation with our guests. And yes, the Gotham Awards were one of the more noteworthy events of this week, along with the Film Independent Spirit Awards nomination. So the two big groups that celebrate work in independent films both made some news this week, and both seem to agree on the fact that Spotlight and Carol are the year's two most beloved movies among the indie film community. Carol led the Spirit Awards with 6 nominations, while Spotlight won the Best Feature and Best Screenplay prizes at the Gotham Awards, in addition to receiving a special jury prize for its terrific cast. Other films which registered strongly with both indie groups include Tangerine, which was shot entirely on iPhones and was nominated for the top honors at both groups and won the Best Breakthrough Actress Award for its trans actress star, Maya Taylor, at the Gotham Awards, and The Diary of a Teenage Girl, for which Belle Powley won the Best Actress Award at the Gotham Awards and was nominated for that same prize at the Spirit Awards. More mixed messages were sent, though, about Love and Mercy and Room. The sole nomination for Love and Mercy at the Spirit Awards went to Paul Dano in the Best Supporting Actor category. Dano was also the winner at the Gotham Awards for Best Actor. So category confusion may be a problem there, but he is popping from that movie. Meanwhile, from Room, which is a movie that seems to be quite strong in and outside of the indie community, Brie Larson was the standout. She was the only major nominee at the Spirit Awards for the film, and she was nominated against Pally at the Gotham Awards. Meanwhile, this week we are also expecting news from the National Board of Review Awards, which will announce their honorees this week, and then we'll present them next month. Also, the New York and Los Angeles film critics groups are going to announce their big winners, which is something that can give a boost to a lower-profile film or performance at an important time. And the Academy will announce its Best Documentary Feature shortlist, culling down a list of 124 to 15 from which the eventual 5 nominees will be chosen. At this point, almost all of the major Oscar contenders have been unveiled. We have yet to see In the Heart of the Sea, which at one time was thought to be a serious contender, and we have yet to see Star Wars The Force Awakens, which will have its world premiere on December 14th. But we have now seen David O. Russell's Joy, which stars Jennifer Lawrence, and we have now seen The Hateful Eight, which is Quentin Tarantino's latest. And we'll have more to say about those once their review embargoes have lifted in a matter of days. But for now, let's turn the focus of this podcast back to Blythe Danner, the widow of Bruce Paltrow, the mother of Gwyneth and Jake Paltrow, and surely one of the classiest ladies and most talented actresses in the business. It's an honor to have her with us, and let's go to that conversation.
Well, thank you so much for coming and doing this, and it's so great to have you. And I think one thing that we need to say off the bat is that this is your 50th year in this business, so mazel tov, and had it. Can you believe it?
You know what? I think because I've never had any expectations. I mean, I really have had a career that's been I'm always a company member, always have been. I'm so used to playing supporting roles, and really have been very content with that. I mean, never had a great surging desire to be a movie star. So I've done a lot of leads and Broadway shows, but never have in a film. So this is just a complete and utter delightful surprise. And what a way to celebrate 50 years in the business.
It really is terrific. And I have to say, it was a treat for me to finally see you on Broadway, because I've started covering the Tonys now, and about within the last year, I think it was the Country House you were so good in.
And thank you.
But when you were first embarking on a career as an actor, did you solely imagine it as a theater career, or did you always have an ambition for getting into screen acting as well?
It was really the theater. Mm-hmm. That's where I felt the most comfortable. The little bit of film I did way back in the beginning was, to me, constricting. You know, it was the physicality, the freedom. I've always been a physical mm-hmm. person, and I just didn't know what to make of it when mm-hmm. No, don't move off your mark. Yeah. What are you doing? You yeah. know, don't make that face. Or and I just found it horrific. I did not like it. I said, oh, I'm never going to be doing this. And I didn't for a long time. And when I did, I was usually pretty uncomfortable. And then there were things along the way that made me, you know, better roles, but were more three-dimensional, that made me feel more comfortable.
Well, I'm going to bring up a couple of those in a minute. But first of all, do you remember why you first tried acting in the first place and when you knew that this was what you wanted to do? Was there a moment?
I don't know if there was a moment. I went to a wonderful Quaker school in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, George School, that had a wonderful drama department. But even earlier than that, my parents were beautiful people who sang, had the most gorgeous singing voices. And my dad was known as the singing banker in Philadelphia
really?
Because he would moonlight, you know, doing church jobs and different jobs. And my mother and father met at the Choral Arts Society, actually, in Philadelphia.
Wow.
They both had beautiful, beautiful voices. So they would do the PTA shows, and she'd be glamorous and dressed up. And Dad would, you know, he was funny because he could never remember his lines. So he would write them on his cuff or his hands. I'm inherited that, I'm afraid, as you heard my story. And but they transformed themselves, you know, from the everyday people they were, and I just found it so seductive. I think that probably was the first alluring thing about it.
That you could just be somebody else.
Yeah, and then that grew, that desire for that and the pleasure of that as I got older was I loved escaping from my own persona into somebody else's. And I still love that. I find a freedom in it that I don't have as a person.
That's so interesting. So you go off to, I believe, Bard College, right? And was it there that you began formally studying more so, or was, you know, how much was theater a part of your life or acting a part of your life when you were there?
Well, I was a major in theater, so it was a big part of it, and then sang and philosophy. It's a wonderful school. It still is. It even probably be more academic than it was back then, but it was a wonderful place to just. We had many different kinds of teachers. We had someone from the English who'd been at the young Vic, or the old Vic, rather.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we had a very technical person and a very method person. So we were getting a whole wonderful cross.
That's great.
Yeah.
And did you adopt a particular approach, or how would you articulate the way that you go about it?
No, I think it's just a hodgepodge, you know. It sort of depends on what it is. I've always gone back to, I guess, what you would call the method, but there are certain roles that you kind of spring and surprise yourself and do something you didn't think were method at all. Working from the outside in, usually the method's the opposite. It's working from the inside out, but it really depends on the role, I think.
So at a very, very young age, right, not long after coming out of college, you were a hit on the stage.
That was a surprise too. I'd gone into the Trinity Square Playhouse in Rhode Island and did some Chekhov there, and then went to the Theater Company of Boston, which had just Bobby Duvall and Dustin Hoffman, such a great range of actors working there, and that was sort of inspiring. I got to work there. And then came into New York, and soon after, I think I did one off-Broadway play, which opened and closed, and actually met my husband at another play,
sure,
that opened and closed as well, sadly. And and then Butterflies of Free came along, and I remember thinking, oh, this isn't a serious play. I don't think I should do this. I'm a really serious actress. And I met with the director, Milton Casellas, who mm-hmm. was a wonderful teacher here mm-hmm. for many years. And he said, I think we can do something with this. And I was, you know, that kind of head in the clouds, grand ideas of doing serious stuff. And then that was the thing that was so well received.
And sort of catapulted you. I mean, I think you won the Tony
for that. I won the Tony for that,
At what age was this?
26.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. Were you able to process how unusual that is at that time?
I hate to admit it because it sounds so ungrateful, but I didn't really enjoy it.
Really?
All of a sudden, there was all this. My husband said when he first met me, I used to back into rooms.
I was
very kind of shy. He was, I think one of the reasons I embraced him so much is he was just the most wonderful, warm extrovert. He loved people. He was just out there, you know, embracing life. And I was sort of the opposite and shy. And so I didn't really enjoy it very much, which is terrible. I think I was too young maybe to appreciate what it was, you know, and not that 26 is that young, but having a young time in my career. And I was telling this story to somebody the other night that after I won the Tony, I got this huge applause when I came on stage, and it ruined my entrance. Because I had timed this very intricate kind of physical thing. I almost somersaulted, and it was just timed perfectly, and I completely goofed up on it, and I was furious. Isn't that awful?
I
win an award, and that's why I get an applause, and they messed up my entrance. So it was really kind of ridiculous, but it was a time when I felt, you know, kind of, it was excruciating in a way to be all of a sudden in the focus of people expecting more of you, I think. And at that moment, I remember thinking, I think I'm just going to get married and have kids.
And you were going to walk. You were ready to walk away from the whole career.
Well, it was bizarre. I mean, I loved acting so much, but I didn't enjoy that whole experience that much. So I did actually. I got married and started having kids pretty soon after that.
Were there a few years there that you just took off, or were you able to simultaneously continue acting while raising the kids?
I would take off if I had a good babysitter or a good, you know, I didn't always plan all that very well. Mm-hmm. So if I had somebody good, I'd take a job. And then sometimes it was something dreadful. And then once I was offered a couple of really great things and I didn't, so I didn't go away. You know, I mean, I was never planning to go away. Anyway, but Bruce and I would take turns. If one of us was home, the other made sure that if one of us was away, the other would be home.
When did the first film opportunities present themselves? Because you mentioned that I'll See You in My Dreams is your first leading role, but you've been in some excellent films over the years, and I don't know if what was the first?
Oh gosh, the first one is one I'd really like to forget. It was called. It was finally called To Kill a Clown. It was with Alan Alda, who I adored, and a young man from Canada, Heath. Oh, boy, he's going to kill me, Heath. And we got to the set. It was a really good script. And we went down to the Grand Bahama Island to shoot it. And the director took the script and threw it in the ocean and said, "We're going to improvise." And I, what?
That's Had you not, ever improvised?
That's
before?
Not what I signed on for. Right. Well, in acting class, I wasn't terribly good at it. I mean, Alan's brilliant at it, but still, it just did not come together. Right. I mean, it was kind of tragic because the script was so good.
Yeah.
It really was a very good script.
And it just didn't pan out the way.
So I think that, and that was some of the worst work. I couldn't even watch it. I was talking up in this little voice, and it was just terrible work. And that was the first one that I did.
What was the first one that you were proud to be a part
of? Oh, gosh. Well, probably Great Santini.
I was going to guess that. Yeah, I mean, and here you are, so I guess, again, with Duval, right? Reunited with
That's
Duval.
That's right. Yeah, I actually didn't work with Bobby up in Boston, but I was sitting there and, you know, getting ready to work. He would and just mouth open, dropping beautiful work. I was thrilled to work with him.
Now, I'm just going to mention a few other film roles over the years that if you have a thought or whatever, like whatever first comes to mind, but Brighton Beach Memoirs?
Oh, I really enjoyed that a lot. I mean, Judy Ivy and I were criticized for not being Jewish and being cast in those roles. And I said, well, she's just like my grandmother. I just tried to play my grandmother.
Right.
And my favorite line in that was, "There are no bones and liver." When he wouldn't eat his liver.
Yes.
Jonathan Silverman. It was so wonderful.
Mr. and Mrs. Bridge.
Oh, that too was a wonderful experience with Joanne and Paul.
Yeah.
And the most difficult role I had, scene I had was with Joanne before, that character I played kills herself. Mm-hmm. And it was very, you know, she was wonderful to play with.
Yeah.
Very, very giving. And
sure.
That was a very good experience.
The Prince of Tides?
Prince of Tides adored Barbara mm-hmm. Streisand, who directed, and Nick was so great. I really loved working with Barbara because she so understood an actor's pain, yeah. You know, trying to do. I had to do an emotional scene, and I was never very good back then at being able to get the emotion at the right time mm-hmm. and the pressure, you know, we're rolling. Mm-hmm. And she was so tender and kind and terrific. I admired her because she had sort of a tough crew on that. I was there at the very beginning of the shoot. Mm-hmm. And I thought those guys were tough on her.
They were giving her a hard time.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, she was such a lady. She really handled it so well. And she never lost it. She dealt with it. It was behind the scenes. But I grew very fond of her. And
I wonder why she doesn't
respect.
Direct much anymore.
I know she should. Well, I think it probably takes a heck of a lot out of you when
you're right.
giving your all and having to be... They're 24/7, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know. She should, though, because she's very, very good.
Interesting. And Husbands and Wives?
Oh, yeah. I did three with Woody Allen.
Oh, yeah. So that's right. So
I got cut out of that. So it was ambivalent.
Well, of the three, can you recount your experience with him overall, though?
Alice, I think, was the... I had a good scene with Mia.
Yes.
And that was a nice experience. Yeah. Oh, it's great to be there. You know, he's so interesting to be around. I mean, he just, hello, here you are, and I'll stand here. And I just remember when sometimes I would say, oh, he did not, or I would separate those. I wouldn't run them together like he didn't. And that was my biggest correction from Woody. He said, no. And he'd kind of talk to me like, I said, oh, you just want me to do you.
Is that what your sense was?
Yeah, a little bit.
Because it seems like actually in almost every, you know, now he no longer kind of acts too much, too often in his movies, but there does seem to be somebody as his surrogate.
Yes,
you know,
very, very much so, I think.
And of course, I have to mention the Focker family and Meet the Parents and its sequels. I mean, when that came along, first of all, did you ever get an indication of why that particular role came to you?
No.
Because you're hilarious.
I actually don't. I think, had I already done some Will and Grace, I must have by then. Gee, I got all, you know, we did them basically 5 years apart, three of them. And maybe that was it, because, you know, the character in Will and Grace was funny.
Yes.
And actually, the girl in Butterflies to Free was very funny, but I never got cast much in comedy. I don't know. I went in and read with Bob, and I never did ask them what they thought of me for that. But it was a ball. It was really... I sort of sat back and would wave from the background and enjoy, watch that gang together and learned a lot, you know, was great.
And then one that's not a big screen role, but a screen role that was excellent, Huff.
I loved Izzy, that character. Mm. A complicated, again, you know, chance to get a three-dimensional woman with a tongue, a sharp tongue, and... that was a real... I loved her because I could really just jump into the blue. Yeah. And it was a real departure for me. Not that I don't have a sharp tongue and can't be bitchy, but no. But she was to the third dimension or degree.
And it was very, very celebrated. I think, wasn't there one evening, I'm trying to remember the specifics, but you were basically nominated for three Emmys?
Yeah. My son called me from New York and said, Mom, he woke me up and said, you got three nominations. I said, what? That was bizarre.
I mean, is there any precedent for that?
I think someone told me Glenda Jackson or Alan Alda. I think maybe the two of them.
But pretty exclusive company. That's unbelievable. And you did, for the record, win for Huff.
For Huff.
Right? Yeah.
Two years, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a real thrill.
So, okay, coming back to... I'll See You in My Dreams, which I think people may not realize. This story about people finding love later than you would expect to see in a movie based on the kinds of movies that get made. This was written, directed, edited by a filmmaker in his 20s.
In
and
his
I just
20s.
Wonder if you can talk about, you know, the guy, Brett Haley. How does such a young guy A, tap into this understanding, and B, convince such a great actress to star in a very early film for him?
Oh, you know, I've always loved indies, and I always get some of them have never been seen. And so you just actually, the only reason I almost turned it down was because I was in every scene, and I was kind of intimidated by that. And my agent said, oh, no, you've got to do this. I said, but I don't want to let myself down or him down.
Because you were concerned about stamina.
Stamina, yeah. But, you know, he wrote it because... So I just read the script and thought it was terrific and met him and could not understand how he could come to this insight. But he explained to me that at the time, I think he was really thinking a lot about death and life and death and how he was going to proceed in his life as a young filmmaker who wasn't able to get anything going. And feeling discouraged and going through all of these, you know, this whole spectrum of emotions and feelings. And he said, I want to get it on, I want to get down what I'm feeling on paper, mm-hmm. but who's going to really be interested in a 29-year-old, you know, kvetching about his troubles and getting his career going? So he decided to put it into the body of a 70-year-old woman. And actually, he and Martin Starr did a terrific thing. They went out and to Kickstarter, mm-hmm. and they went to interview a lot of people in a retirement mm-hmm. home, and they were terrific people. I think people were really, and not that they gained that much of a, you know, foothold for the financing sure. through that, but they did start that way, and they did really got some wonderful interviews from people who turned out to be the extras in our movie.
Is that right? Wow.
Which was fun. But I was very taken with him. He's a very upbeat guy. And I thought that this was such a quiet film. And I thought, is he going to, you know, we're going to have to go real inward with this mm-hmm. film. And I was a little nervous initially because he had so much energy.
Yeah.
But he just immediately knew how to create a whole ambiance on the set that was so... So beautiful and easy. He just made it feel so effortless.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you like it when you can relate to a character? Does it make your job easier if there are things about a character you can relate to or not? Is it easier to just lose yourself in somebody that's completely different?
Oh, well, I think some of this is theater training. Mm-hmm. But as I said, with Izzy, I loved the fact that she was so different from me. And I could the springboard into another world, which was actually very freeing and felt terrific. Mm-hmm. And then Carol in See You in My Dreams is actually very close to me. I'm much more scatterbrained than she is. I love the fact that she was so focused and mm-hmm. sort of serene in her. She's heading to the last chapter of her life, but she's doing it without a lot of fear and trepidation, you know. And she has this shell around her of protection, but I think it kind of falls away unconsciously. And I think it's kind of why people have related to it, because he didn't nail down certain things in her life that mm-hmm. she has to do. You know, he made it very ambivalent in mm-hmm. a way. And I think that's why people have responded to it, too, because at one point I said, well, why doesn't she read to children, or why doesn't she have to, you know, do social service? And mm-hmm. he never really answered it, but I understood afterwards there's a kind of every woman aspect of her,
right.
You know, the every man, every woman, and I think that's made her was very attractive to people, that she was someone who had a kind of a tough core shell anyway, I like that about her. She, you know, kind of a wise guy. It reminded me of like a Barbara Stanwyck character or somebody from another era.
Right.
She had that no-nonsense, wise guy thing, which I think is very attractive in women, and it's not written very often.
No. I guess, who are the old guys that would do that? Great. Preston Sturges, maybe, or some of those, mm-hmm. some of those folks. But I guess one thing here, you know, you mentioned your husband earlier, and I think it's now been 13 years since you lost him. And is it painful or cathartic to now kind of have to relive some of the grief that I'm sure, you know, anyone under those circumstances goes through? Here, your character on the screen is also a widow. I think her her relationship with her children is not as nice as yours is. Yours have been, from everything I can see, just so gushingly proud about their mom. But
with a degree.
To a degree. But, I mean, was it painful or cathartic to kind of go into the skin of somebody who's still kind of in a funk from losing her spouse?
Yeah, I think it would have been more traumatic or painful if Brett hadn't created such a wonderful place to work. It just came off the page. Mm-hmm. The emotion, everything was just there to come to access. And I was grateful. I remember after one scene, I looked up and said, "Thank you, Brucey. You know, you helped me out."
Yeah.
Because I was able to just zone in and all of those emotions.
Yeah.
I mean, you're an actor. You have to call on your
sure.
past. And it's not cheating because it's...
It's real.
You've got it. It's there to be called upon.
Sure.
Well, maybe it is cheating, but
whatever it takes, right?
Yeah.
Now, just if you can maybe fill in a few of the blanks. I know it was a very low budget, very short shoot.
Mm. 18 days,
mm-hmm. and the budget was like nothing, right?
Very, very small budget, and it's made. You know, it's made a lot of money for a small film.
Yeah, but you know, working under the circumstances that come with a low budget and a you know, a short shoot and difficult subject matter, could you still enjoy the experience of making this movie?
Absolutely, because it was a godsend, because every single person involved wanted to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody was earning any money, and mm-hmm. everybody does those incredible women, you know, June Squibb and Rhea Perlman, yeah. Mary Kay Place, and then Martin Starr, who's, you know, so unlike anything else I've ever seen
yeah.
him do.
Yeah.
This lovely, soulful guy who's actually a Buddhist. I turned to him at one point when we were just having coffee, and he was so brought such a serenity, which helped me in my, with mm-hmm. my character. I said, "Are you a Buddhist by any chance?" He said, "Yes."
That's awesome. You pegged it. Yeah.
Yeah, and Sam, of course, yeah. you know, Sam is just so wonderful. So everybody wanted to be there and was really pulling for it. So it was this ideal. We didn't have rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just an ideal coming together of people and personalities and a loving experience.
Mm-hmm.
It really was.
Now, I know for budgetary reasons, movies are rarely shot in sequence. How did that work on this one? Because I would think it would be kind of a emotional roller coaster to not do it in sequence. Were you able to?
Well, the good thing is we shot all the interiors in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
So we could. I always requested that. If could we possibly, you know, shoot them in sequence.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't always possible, but
mm-hmm.
but it does help, of
sure.
course. It's more like a theater, the
mm-hmm.
theater, which is what I do love doing, coming in the beginning, middle, and end.
The arc, yeah.
Yeah, the arc.
Now, Sam Elliott is, I want to ask you about him because you guys have such wonderful chemistry here, and I don't mm-hmm. think you'd ever met before this, right?
Not at all, no. And I've become like an old hat story now, but I was really kind of had a nightmare about going to, you know, doing the love scenes with him with that big white mustache. I thought, oh my gosh.
Right, right. How are you going to handle that?
Yeah, and it had been a long time since I, you know, had a love scene or in life or not.
Right. So. Well, that's the thing that I find a directorial decision that's interesting was that your first scene, I believe in the movie, or Sam's first scene, something like it was,
yeah.
was the
early
kissing
on.
Scene, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that, you know, for anybody, it can't be the most comfortable scene to do, but you kind of fell into it?
Yeah, it was easy because he was so, you know, what you hear Sam speak, that's basically Sam with his wonderful, kind, I thought it would be scary, but it wasn't at all. He was
right.
He was wonderful.
Yeah.
Made it very easy. Yeah, we had a good time.
Well, when I spoke to him around the time the movie came out, he couldn't stop saying your praises. He said it was fantastic. And
isn't he good in Grandma? Do you see
Grandma
him?
As well?
Isn't he
and
fabulous?
Then he's got a third one that was also at Sundance. I think he's had three movies this year. And Justify. I mean, the guy.
Impressive. There's somebody who's really coming into his own.
Yeah.
Well, he's always been, but
yeah.
I mean, in this, he's around my age, and it's just all this. He doesn't stop working.
Yeah. But one thing that he brings up, which I want to ask you about, is that unfortunately, particularly in films, maybe not as much in theater or even television, there is this dearth of opportunities for women after, you know, starts at 40, some people say, and it doesn't get better after that. So he says, I'm married to one, Catherine Ross. Yes. Yeah. I think they kind of look alike. But anyway, yeah. So that was Catherine Ross. And what's your take on this? I mean, why would it be that particularly with film and contrast it with the others? Do you find that it's worse with film?
I think it's, you know, I'm not a really great one to talk to about it because I've never been in that position of, you know, having a dearth of roles, especially now. I think, you know, I remember meeting Leslie Caron years ago, and she said, I'm leaving Hollywood, don't you, after 30, you know. But that's changed a lot. Maybe as our country is aging and we're going through all of this very difficult time in the world, and I think that people are ready for older people to have richer roles. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think it's sort of a natural growth. It seems to me that they're better and better roles for older women. I mean, I look around and see Lily and Jane Fonda and Helen Mirren and, well, Meryl's not an old gal yet, but I mean, you know, they're older women roles are richer and richer than Maggie Smith and Judy Dench. I mean, I think there's a big contrast to what it was even 10 years ago, probably. So, I mean, I'm certainly not complaining
No, that's interesting. Theater seems to be more welcoming of characters, right, of character parts, don't you think?
I think it always has been,
So honing in on a few specific things in this movie, in I'll See You in My Dreams, that I thought were particularly impressive and I've got to ask you about, there's one scene involving a golden retriever that is like, you know.
It comes early on,
and it's audibly heartbreaking for you. You go to the theater and people are, you know, sobbing. What was that like for you to shoot?
I would have normally been terrified because emotion has never come easily for me on film. And I just have to give Brett credit. Well, I had two golden retrievers, and they both did die. And I've had dogs all my life and love dogs. And just something about sitting in that sterile, that was not in the house, of course. Mm-hmm. I was in a vet office, sitting in this sterile place with that stainless steel and the dog lying on it. And it just came up, just was a well of emotion. And I think, you know, thinking about the dogs and not to put my husband in second place, but just all of death in general, my parents, it just sort of washed over me. And but it was in the script so beautifully drawn without a lot of mushy, you know, sentimental stuff. He was so smart at cutting through a lot of the sentimental things. Mm-hmm. And what she said to the dog was just so very sweet and plain and not fraught with any extraneous stuff, that it just kind of, I think we did it in one take, one or two takes, because it just kind of washed over.
Yeah, well, it was fantastic. A very different vibe of a scene was the karaoke scene, and you have a lovely voice. I think,
thank you.
Does that song have particular meaning to you?
I sang a lot of jazz in college, and so that was one of the songs in the repertoire that we did, you know, at dances and things. That was a case of, oh God, I wish we'd had another chance to do several more takes. Even though we did several takes, I was never happy with it. I said, oh, give me another chance. We had to move on.
Sure. The third that I have to ask is when finally, and this will not ruin it if you haven't seen the movie, but there's a scene involving a rat finally being detained.
Right.
And then there's this bursting of emotion. And for that one, take us back to that day. What was going through for you?
Oh, that was harder. I guess that was at the end. I think it was the end of the shoot. I remember being very tired because there were some days that I thought, am I going to be able to get through it?
Yeah.
And so that kind of fed it in a way.
Yeah.
And Martin, as I said, Martin's serenity and presence, you know, everybody in this movie was so present for one another, for each, we were very present for one another, which I think lent some of that richness.
So when along the line did you kind of realize that this movie was going to be be something special. How early on were you able to know that?
Well, at Sundance, I thought something that had gone wrong. I mean, it was really bizarre. They stood and applauded and just sort of didn't stop. And I thought, oh, that's all those nice old ladies in the audience. And I looked around and there were quite a few, you know, women my age. And I said, oh, they're just so glad that here we are, Sam and Rhea. And but we were all there.
Yeah, yeah.
And June and Mary Kay isn't as old as we all are. But I said, they're just so grateful to see these old people up there on the screen, you know. And it was just colossal. I mean, we were all sort of astonished, I think. And so I didn't think anything more of it than that.
But it was pretty special. That's unusual,
really special.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah, and everybody kept saying, this is unusual. I thought, really? So that was very... And then, of course, being requested to do so many things and the day show and interviews.
Sure.
And I thought, wow, I guess this has a life.
Sure. And what has been the feedback? You've done a lot of, as you say, interviews, but also Q&As and all kinds of appearances, and you've gotten, I'm sure, a lot of feedback. What has been the feedback that has meant the most to you with regard to this film?
The acknowledgement.
Yeah.
You know, having been a supporting player all of my life, all of my career, except in the theater, mm-hmm. At first, I had that same strange reaction I did when I first, you know, started and had success. But I just have embraced the celebration of my 50th year and being acknowledged as someone who has done a good job and a starring role in a film has just meant the world to me. And my children's support, my daughter Gwyneth, has been just so... So, Mom, you just have to go this route and do it. You know, come out and just campaign for. You're not going to get necessarily an Oscar nomination. I said no, and I certainly wouldn't even want that. It's just great having this Gotham nomination.
Well, that congratulations,
an independent thing. But you know, the whole idea of coming out here and doing all of this, as I'm doing with you, it just was something that struck me as just alien and odd, but. Mm-hmm. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Well, and let me ask you, because I had the privilege of being on both coasts for the two lunches that your children have hosted for you. One of them was around the time of the release in New York with Jake, and then a couple of weeks ago here in L.A., Gwyneth at Craig's. And as somebody who doesn't know them, it was touching to hear the lovely things they had to say. What did it mean for you to, you know, obviously these are people that know you as well as anyone, and they are so proud and had such really terrific things to say that I think it seemed to move a lot of people, including you.
Yeah. No, it was, well, my daughter is so eloquent, and Jake is too. He's shyer.
Yeah.
But, it meant the world, you know, because I, as a mother, when you're growing up and trying to raise children well and also act and You hit yourself, you know, with the hair shirt, and well, that's some mixing metaphors there.
It's all right.
Punishing yourself for not being completely present, and you know, we look back and say, "Well, I should have done that better, and I should have done that better." But they're both great people, and it means a lot to me that they've been so supportive.
And it's quite a testament that they followed in your footsteps, right? I mean, could you have imagined that? Would you have wished that
no.
they would?
No, just the opposite. Well, Jake is an extraordinary writer and director, and Bruce and I both really discouraged both of them. We said, your kids are smart, you know, and we were told that one could be a lawyer and a philosopher, and kept saying, and when she was at school in New York, and Jake the same. I said, why would you want to do this? You know, it's just such a difficult road to hoe. And I'm very glad they both chose it, because they found their passions.
Yeah.
And that's all you really want your children to do, is find their passion and be able to, you know, flourish.
Absolutely. So winding down here, just a couple last things. What is it that you hope people who haven't yet seen the film, when they go there, or I guess if they have seen it, whatever, what is it that, if you could control it, they would leave the film thinking or doing differently in the real world? Is there something that, you know, maybe we should be more sensitive to or think about or do differently?
Yeah, I've had some young people, young women who've seen it and have just were so moved by it. And they said, you know, we think, we see how marginalized this generation is, the older, both not only women, but men. And the very sensitive reaction has been that when in tears, a few of them said, "We, you know, this will be us. And we have to give more cognizance, more credit to this generation. In this country, we don't do that very much."
Yeah.
And just to be kind.
Yeah.
William James said, "Be kind, be kind, be kind."
Yes.
And carry on, and not to stop. You know, I think that's a terrible thing. Also, that a lot of people give up, as Sam says in the movie. I don't know. I hate the idea of old age people sitting watching television and just, you know, not engaging. And there's a lot of, I love seeing people do social service and getting out there and helping younger kids with reading or doing anything. And I'm active in Planned Parenthood and the environment for many years, and my husband's Oral Cancer Foundation. And those, you know, you feel like you're doing something worthwhile. And people should never stop, because there's a lot of wisdom there. Not that I have it, but of older people I know, I've just lost a bunch of older people. It's just so sad to me that gave me a lot of, spread their wisdom around.
Mm-hmm. Well, fortunately for us, you are already on to the next really exciting thing, which is Ruth Madoff, I believe, right?
Oh.
Tell us about that.
Well, it's funny. I had done a version of Ruth with Sarah Jessica Parker a few years ago. Amanda Peet wrote a play called The Commons of Pensacola. And Sarah Jessica and I did it off Broadway a few years ago, and I loved it. We weren't actually Ruth, and they were girls instead of the sons, the daughters, but very much based on them. And I really enjoyed it. It was a very good experience. But Madoff is terrific. Richard Dreyfuss is Bernie, and he's fantastic. Ruth is sort of in and out, so I'm not sure that I don't quite have the sense yet of her, but I'm anxious to see it.
Yeah, I'll be curious to know what your interpretation is, whether she knew what all of that. You know, that's the.
I don't think she knew.
I
actually met her.
Ah, really?
Yeah, I met her, and she just seemed so wounded, you know, and yet it was wonderful to see her kids, her grandkids. Adore her, and she used to be very, very funny, and I'm sure some of that is.
Well, what a Shakespearean character with the children and what's happened with them and the whole thing. I can't wait to see what you do.
Sitting there watching her, I thought, how could she be sitting there, having lost two sons and
everything, and you know, whatever life that she thought she had. But I can't wait to see that. And it's such a treat to watch you act, especially in this latest film, and a privilege to have you here, and I just can't thank you enough.
Well, Scott, I appreciate you. You've been such a supporter in this whole project. Thank you very, very much.
Absolutely. Pleasure. Thanks.